Welcome back to the Graston Technique Forum. Our first installment, regarding GT in the treatment of injuries to golfers, focused on common injuries. Our second installment highlights the treatment approach regarding an acute versus chronic golf injury. Our guests are Nathan Sells, a regional manager for Athletico Physical Therapy and GT provider since 2011, and Barton Bishop, Chief Clinical Officer for Sport and Spine Rehab and GT provider since 2008.
Welcome back for part two of our GT Forum podcast. Barton, can you explain maybe how your treatment approach might differ with an acute injury versus a chronic injury with Graston Technique?
I said it kind of at the beginning that there's more than one way to skin a cat, no pun intended, you know, and you can do that with an instrument. And I think there is a definite belief that using Graston Technique and instruments that it's all pain, you know, everything, oh, it just hurts a lot and you bruise people and you know, you're just causing pain. And I can tell you if that's the way you're treating, you're doing it wrong. So stop. There are times when it does hurt, and in acute injuries, you may get into a really painful and sore area, and you may have to treat very light with some brushing strokes or, you know, depending on if there's swelling, maybe some milking to get rid of the acute inflammatory result that's there. And as you move into the chronic conditions, you may definitely use more of the functional style treatment using the exercise while we're doing the treatment with the instruments, and you can get a little bit more aggressive in those types of treatments, and you can work a little bit deeper if you need to.
Nathan, how about yourself? Could you explain a little bit about how your treatment approach with Graston Technique might differ with an acute injury, maybe like using it in a non-inflammatory approach?
Yeah, I don't want to, you know, just repeat what Barton says, because I agree with him wholeheartedly. I think on those acute injuries, a lot of times it is just how can you use it to help with edema reduction, whether it be some of the milking techniques, the light brushing. And, you know, as we talked about, if you're making it hurt every time, you didn't pay attention in the class and you're not using it appropriately. Very often, from the assessment of seeing exactly what's going on in the tissue to also just helping accelerate some of the lymphatic response, the reduction in the acute injury is much different than the chronic injury like a tendinosis where you're trying to get deep and almost create a little bit of a histamine response to get some remodeling of the tissue. Clearly that's not what you're going to want to do in the acute setting.
Right. Do you very frequently find peripheral restrictions that may be contributing to maybe the lesion itself? So say somebody comes in with a lateral epicondylitis, like where in the kinetic chain do you typically find other lesions or restrictions?
If I look at, you know, I was always taught you go up and down the chain regardless. So absolutely. I think, you know, it's one thing. And it's frustrating to see the patients come in that have had a long-running history of something like a lateral epicondylitis, and they receive some treatment, the ultrasound, the standard cross friction, maybe some other protective bracing, and then they come back, and they're better for 2, 3, 4 months, and then they're constantly back. And so you really have to look up the chain and down the chain to find, is there restriction in the shoulder? Is there something that's allowing them to not extend fully? If it's that lead arm in the golf swing, is there something that's causing them to not have a breakdown of the lead arm and they're losing extension there? And that is, if you don't address that, you're going to be in that vicious cycle where they receive the palliative care, they get better, and then they're right back in it because it's sort of like a Band-Aid over a bullet hole. You didn't fix the actual issue. You just tried to clog it and stop it for a little while.
Sure. Let's talk briefly about using Graston Technique in a maintenance regimen. You've talked on this briefly, but in your practice, do you have a slightly modified application of Graston Technique when treating somebody maybe who's not injured and maybe you're focusing more on trying to improve performance?
For myself, we do, and that would have been out of our golf performance center. And when you're at that center, it's a combination of injury, which would, in our practice, go through the third-party payers, the health insurance, versus the performance base. And when you look at that, it's the ability to really, in my mind, Grafton can really make a difference on the increased mobility and using some of that functional exercise, functional movements in conjunction with instrument-assisted soft tissue to really get the person into positions and free up movements that I wasn't able to do before. And with that, I will definitely have the ability to do that at a level where, if we're being honest, the insurance company is going to stop providing and deem not medically necessary prior to getting to that. And so it really does extend beyond just the course of standard physical therapy care in our company.
Martin, how about yourself? Do you use Grafton Technique in a maintenance-type manner where you're maybe focusing more on performance versus treating an actual injury?
Yes, I do. I don't know, again, that research backs this up, but I've seen it clinically over the years that you can use the instruments and Grafton Technique to really, for lack of a better term, wake up a muscle. So if there's someone that is just not doing something that you want in a performance fashion, power, you know, really looking at that type of, you know, mobility function power areas, you can use it to kind of wake up a muscle. You stimulate it, you get some blood flow into it, you get that brain muscle connection to say, oh, okay, that's where that thing is. So I like to use it a lot when I'm looking at this wellness, fitness, whatever term you want to place on it.
And do you ever get much pushback from your golfers thinking that maybe working on mobility or stability during the middle of the season, do many golfers out there feel like that's going to have an adverse effect on their touch and on their short game?
Personally, not recently. I think, you know, I can tell you from experience, personal experience, when I was a high school golfer, I remember this was back in 90s, and I'm not that old, but, you know, a long time ago in terms of fitness and that for golf. And it was just when the fitness wave was coming over. Remember, Tiger didn't win the Masters until 1997. And he was really the first mainstream guy to take fitness and wellness into golf. Obviously, Gary Player had been doing it for a number of years before that, and other people, Greg Norman was always pretty fit and so on. But he really took it. And so I remember talking to my golf pro, and he said he went to a class and on strength training for golf. And I said, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. When I lift weights, I'm sore, and therefore I can't chip, I can't putt, I can't feel my club head, I can't swing. And you know, I kind of took that with me into college, and I was actually suspended from a tournament by my coach because I didn't work out with the team over the winter very much. So I learned my lesson that you listen to what your golf coaches tell you to do. But it happens, but when you get them to do it a few times, they all of a sudden realize that their body accommodates. And even with that soreness, you can still maintain that touch. You know, you look at what the real professional golfers do. You look at workouts, and you can see these on YouTube and Instagram and that. You look at what Rory McIlroy does when he works out, and Ricky Fowler and Hunter Mahan and these guys. I mean, they're really working hard, really working hard. And they do this often before they go and play a professional tournament round. So then my Joe Schmo that's looking to take a $5 NAS off his buddy, he can do it.
Nathan, anything to add to that?
No, I couldn't really add as much as just say I completely agree. I noticed it more 10 years ago that there was even a little bit of pushback. You can't try to get bigger during the season, you know, just wait till the off season. And there's a little truth to doing more maintenance things during the season, especially if it's in the middle of a competitive golfer and not just the amateur looking for the $5 NAS off. But I think golf fitness has gone a long way, even in the last 10 years. and progress to where you're seeing the PGA Tour players participating more. They look more fit. The college golfers are looking more and more fit. And then groups like the Titleist Performance Institute, you turn on even the Golf Channel and you see equipment, you see devices, you see infomercials for fitness programs. And so I think anymore, the golfers are coming to us to seek out ways to get more fit for golf versus us having to educate them that there's a need for fitness. We have to more educate them on why the Grafton technique and our protocol and our philosophy works for them instead of just global fitness ideas.
So one last question, and I'll throw this out to each of you. And Nathan, first for yourself, for those golfers out there listening to this podcast, what advice do you have for them if they're trying to lower their score from a fitness perspective? What is the best advice you could give to golfers listening to this podcast?
The best advice I would have to them is if you don't currently have a golf-specific fitness routine, and that is a goal of yours, you should. At minimum, if you don't have a fitness routine at all, getting in fit for golf can be a motivation that can make your overall lifestyle, your overall health better, which in alone is the medical professional in me, is something we need more of today. So if that's the motivation of the reason I'm going to go to the gym four times a week and do these things is because it's going to make my golf and my golf performance better, that's a good thing. And then don't just sign up for one online. Don't just read in a magazine, a Golf Digest, a Golf Week, because what's in there might work for 60%, 70%, 80%, whatever that number is, but it might not work for you. Find somebody that has some quality certification, has a background and a knowledge in it, and seek that person out and put the resources in it. We spend $400, $500 on the new driver hoping to grab three, four, five more yards, an extra fairway per round. It's a lot less than that to get an evaluation and a good program. And overall, it's going to help your fitness, your health, and your wellness. Do that. Spend that money, and it'll be money well spent.
Sounds like great advice. Barton, yourself, anything to add to that?
Nathan, you stole my line. I was so going to say people spend way too much money on clubs. But I think that is the case. You know, they need a professional to help guide them. It is all about the healthcare team. It's all about the team approach to it. So part of that is your healthcare provider, physical therapist, your chiropractor, your athletic trainer, whomever it is. Then there's the personal trainer. Then there's the golf coach, swing coach. There's all those people that need to play a part in this. If I were to give, just two real quick things, if you're a male golfer, work on your thoracic rotation and your thoracic extension. You can Google lots of ways, or as Nathan said, you can find a professional to actually teach you how to do that. But work on your thoracic extension and rotation. The instruments are very effective in helping to achieve that, as are a lot of different exercises that are quite simple. And the other thing is to get your hips to be stronger. The stronger your hips are, the more mobility you'll end up having in them, the more likely you are to hit it farther and have more ease hitting it farther, and you're actually going to be able to shoot lower scores. But if you do it in a haphazard manner without guidance and direction, you might as well be trying to write Shakespeare. Having someone teach you how to do it is absolutely the best way to go.
Again, great advice. Thank you for spending time with us today. If you're dealing with an injury and wonder if you can benefit from Grafton Technique treatment, please go to GraftonTechnique.com and locate a GT provider near you.
Thank you for joining the Grafton Technique Forum. Our next podcast will focus on GT in the treatment of injuries to high school athletes.